from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice is waging a vigorous defense of her actions in every public forum except one, the September 11th commission, where she would be questioned about the government's failure to prevent the terrorist attacks. Interviewed on CBS 60 Minutes, Rice also said she'd like to meet with the families of the September 11th victims. Kristen Breitweiser, whose husband Ronald died in New York's World Trade Center, said, "I'd love to meet with Rice as long as it's under oath and it's live in front of television cameras." Rice should come out and explain what the National Security Advisor knew, didn't know, and what kind of information was passed to the president and didn't get passed, said Lori Van Auken, widow of another World Trade Center victim. Commission member John Layman, a Republican, called the refusal to testify a political blunder of the first order. The early campaign skirmishes between George W. Bush and Democratic challenger John Kerry have taken a toll on public attitudes towards both men, pollsters say, with many voters already growing weary of the race's negative tone. Kerry, the target of weeks of Bush attack ads in key battleground states, has been hit the hardest. He has suffered a slight dip in his personal ratings and has fallen behind or into a dead heat with Bush in most national surveys after holding small leads earlier in the month. But some polls also show Bush's approval rating softening, even before he was hit last week with the controversy over former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark's allegations that Bush neglected the terror threat before the September 11th attacks. Iraq's U.S.-led administration Sunday shut down a newspaper that is a mouthpiece for radical Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadr, accusing it of publishing articles that incite violence against American troops. U.S. soldiers handed the paper's editor a letter from U.S. Civil Administrator Paul Bremer, citing a breach of an order issued last year that bans incitement to violence. The letter refers to a series of articles that said incited hatred, including an editorial entitled "Bremer Follows the Steps of Saddam." Hundreds of Shiites later gathered in Baghdad to protest the ban on the newspaper. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
An Oklahoma couple were surprised when they woke up and found a drunk burglary suspect asleep in bed with them, police said on Thursday. The couple from the South Oklahoma city of Ardmore called police, ran out of their house, and watched officers arrest the man, who was still sleeping in their bed despite the sirens and commotion. Dan Johnson, 24, was arrested on the scene in the incident that took place on Sunday and was charged with burglary. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman Newsbreak is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Sometimes when I see those in power pull some political action that's stupid, I say to myself, what were they thinking? But a recent action by the Bushites is so obtuse, so blindingly stupid, that you can only conclude that no thought at all was involved, that no one with the brain power of a single-cell amoeba could have been consulted on such a perverse decision. The Bush incident revolved around a bit of political fluff that the White House tried to foist on us last Labor Day. With his jobs record rivaling Herbert Hoover's, and with every industry from manufacturing to high-tech sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs offshore, Bush's political handlers decided that he needed to do something. Not really do something in the sense of stopping our country's middle-class bleeding, but appear to do something. So, George announced that he was creating, ta-da, a new Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing. Big whoopee. A new bureaucrat to do what? To be a cheerleader and provide political cover, of course. That was stupid. But then came stupid on steroids. 6 months after announcing this position, Bush finally got around to appointing his new manufacturing czar. It was Anthony Raimondo, a Bush campaign contributor and the CEO of a manufacturing outfit in Nebraska. Fine. Since he's from the biz, he might have an actual idea about how to stop offshoring. But no, Guess who had recently fired 75 of his own corporation's U.S. workers and built a new factory in China to employ 180 workers? Yes, Anthony, our new czar. This is Jim Hightower saying, this was too embarrassing, even for Bush's White House of big blunders, so Anthony's name was withdrawn. But it shows how clueless the Bushites are. As Senator Charles Schumer put it, this White House is so bad at jobs, it can't even fill the one it created.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom in the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, streaming all over the planet on radiopower.org, a listener-supported website. Some 12,000 listeners last week on one day, about 85% of them inside the United States, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. And now today we are picking up cable radio network. Have you ever tuned up into those high channels there on your cable system and you discover that there's some channels where there's music? Well, one of those is a talk show and supplied by cable radio network, and we are now on it. So you can find that by going to tomhartman.com. There's a link to cable CRN's website and all that sort of information. Anyhow, welcome back. Happy Monday, the 29th. A lot to talk about today. I've got a great conservative alert for you. The weekend was fascinating. I'm assuming that you saw the testimony. Maybe not. I don't know. It was early, a Sunday morning. Is it Meet the Press, I think it was, with Tim Russert and Richard Clark. And he says, the Republicans are asking that your earlier testimony be declassified. And Clark says, great, declassify all of it. There was that clip, which of course made all the evening news shows the night before, of Senate Leader Bill Frist, the guy whose family made millions by taking nonprofit hospitals and turning them for-profit, and now we discover for-profit hospitals charge you about twice as much if you're uninsured as if you're just squeezing the blood out of us, and turned his family into multimillionaires. And so anyhow, Bill Frist is up there going, it looks to me like this guy has committed perjury, and he's making all these incredible charges. Turns out, then later, when he was actually interviewed by a reporter, he said, I haven't read his other testimony. I don't know if it's really true that he perjured himself. But, of course, the charge made all the news, and you're going to hear that sound clip played ad absurdum on all the various right-wing websites and news shows and talk shows around the country. Oh, one other update. Our chat room has moved over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, effective today. So you can also get to that link off tomhartman.com. Just click there and it'll take you right there. So anyhow, what is George Bush's vision for America? This is, there have been times when I actually thought I had some clue. But I am constantly just baffled. But, yes, let's have more Medicare. No, we're not going to pay for it. Well, yes, we have to. Medicare has to help it, but no, we're not going to allow the government to negotiate with drug companies to get lower prices. So the extra $150 billion that it turns out Tom Scully threatened Stephen Foster with being fired if he talked about is all money that's not going to Medicare recipients, but it's going to private hospitals and drug companies. And now Tom Scully, the guy who threatened to fire Steve Foster if he revealed this, has left government and taken a job working for, guess who? A lobbying firm that works for hospitals and drug companies. Which he was doing, by the way, before he came into the Bush administration in 2001. He was making $675,000 a year as a lobbyist for for-profit hospitals, Bill Frist's buddies. It's like, you know, something is rotten in Denmark. So it's like, what is going on? Anyhow, with regard to Richard Clark and all of this testimony, I've got a clip here from a former president of the United States I want to play real quickly for you, and then we'll get into Colin Powell caught on tape. And it's just, but and I want to frame this in the context of what is Bush's vision for America, because it increasingly it seems to me that he has a very clear vision about get power, punish enemies, pay off campaign contributors. I mean, I've had a number of Republicans on this show and conservatives, and I don't want to paint the entire Republican Party with this brush, because I think there are some decent people in the Republican Party, just as I think in the Democratic Party there's a whole lot of people who are conservatives who are dysfunctional. But, you know, I've had these people on the program, and I said, name one piece of legislation passed, you know, promoted by the White House and passed since George Bush became president that didn't serve corporations first. No Child Left Behind? No, I'm sorry. No Child Left Behind basically mandates testing. These tests that cost about 40 cents to print, that the testing corporations charge hundreds of dollars for. Well, typically it's $25 to $35 per student that they charge. You know, hundreds of dollars per year per student that school districts now have to pay. And it turns out that Neil Bush, George's brother, is in the testing business. And of course, the largest of the testing companies doubled in size from $400 million a year to $800 million a year as soon as No Child Left Behind was passed. Now, that was just a... So, name one. I have not found one. So, what is Bush's vision for the world? We had this extraordinary moment on 9/11. When even the Arab world, even the Muslim world, I realize they're two different things, that even the Muslim world, including the Arab world, was with us. There were marches in Damascus, Syria, in sympathy with the United States. I think the Arab world at that moment said, you know, guys, we really went too far. Or there are some among us who, just like happened among the fundamentalist, you know, hiding out in the mountains, ultra-right-wing Christians when Tim McVeigh bombed the Murrow Building in Oklahoma City. You know, he had read this book, The Turner Diaries, about how, which literally, it's a novel in which a patriot, in quotes, bombs the federal building in Oklahoma City. And it causes the government to clamp down on the civil rights of the people so powerfully. There's such an overreaction by government that all across America, white male Anglo-Saxons with guns rise up and take America back from all those nasty non-white male Christian Anglo-Saxon Protestants who are, you know, the only true patriots. And he, you know, Tim McVeigh believed this. And when he did that and word came out that he was inspired by the Turner Diaries and that he was using Christianity as the basis for this, a lot of people said, whoa, this is over the top. And the same thing happened in the Muslim world when 9/11 happened. And George Bush had an opportunity to use the momentum of that to unite the world with the United States in an effort to track down and bring to justice these thugs, these criminals. And he blew it. He blew it by it was his trifecta. I'll tell you more about that tomorrow. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to drop in and say hi or have some thoughts on this. What do you think George Bush's vision is for the world? Actually, Todd in Arcata, California is on the line. Hey, Todd, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
I just can't wait till Monday mornings to have all this knowledge dropped on me. It was very interesting about the Timothy McVeigh stuff. I didn't realize about the Turner Diaries there.
Oh, it's fascinating. I actually went out and bought the book and read it after I heard about that because I thought, this can't be true. And the Turner Diaries basically starts with exactly what Tim McVeigh did. He thought that he was starting the next American Revolution.
That is pretty strange. Concerning Richard Clark, this guy is probably the most brilliant guy that's come along in a long time. It would be pretty interesting if they did declassify and put him on trial during this election year, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well,
calling witnesses, this would be pretty nice.
Yeah,
for the Democrats.
It's become pretty obvious that the whole let's declassify him thing that Bill Frist was doing was really just trying to get a soundbite into Fox News.
Right.
You know, basically. Well. here's a soundbite of Bill Frist making a speech in the Senate, you know, calling this guy a liar.
Yeah, so. I had a question. You mentioned some statistics a couple of weeks ago about the $50 million was the annual welfare budget, and corporations took about $160 million from the U.S. government.
Billion.
$60 billion, right.
In corporate welfare, yeah.
Yeah,
corporate welfare outnumbers human welfare by about 3-1 at the federal level.
Yeah, what does that include? Because it seems like that's kind of low.
Well, it's a little low on the human side because there's a lot of state welfare that's not built into that.
Right.
But there's also enormous amounts of state welfare to corporations. Corporations have been playing states off against each other. Here in Vermont, for example, we had IBM come in and say, you know, well, we will do business with you, but we want electricity at 7% below what everybody else in the state pays for it. And the new Republican governor said, well, that's cool. We'll do that. And in fact, when Howard Dean was governor, when IBM first came in, they said, we want you to suspend property taxes for us. And he said, okay, we'll do that. And so, you know, there's an enormous amount of corporate welfare that's just impossible to track down because it's scattered among thousands of municipalities and states and counties. But the place that I got that from was OMBWatch.org.
Oh, OMBWatch.org.
Yeah, the Office of Management.
And,
they parse Office and Management of Management and Budget Statistics.
Okay, yeah, I know that. And they got time for one more thing?
Yeah, real quick.
Yeah, you had a guy on. I couldn't get to the phone, but I was in my car. You had a guy on from the Heritage Foundation, I believe, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he was just, I was just sitting on my hands. I was so mad about this guy. Well, you make a good point that government drives a ship. And to prove that is that 52% of the people who are gainfully employed in this country are employed by some municipality, water district, state, federal government. And we all know how many companies live off of government contracts. So almost everybody's job relies on the government in some way.
Well, it depends on how you do the numbers. It's actually, you know, direct employees of government agencies is really about a third of the total workforce in the United States. Yeah. If you include employees of companies that primarily exist because of government contracts, like Boeing and Halliburton and Raytheon
I'm not sure. Making dinners for the troops, right?
Yeah, and making bombs and making weapons. I mean, keep in mind that here's some, you know, just some quick statistics for you. At the federal level, our total spending for, like, Head Start, for example, $7 billion. Humanitarian and foreign aid, $10 billion. K-12 education, $34 billion. Children's health, $41 billion. Defense spending, and, you know, about a third of that is going to various defense contractors. Now it's going to be over $500 billion this year. So there's an enormous amount of money that is federal money that's making its way down to people's jobs.
Well, yeah, so the government decision-making is, you know, driving the whole thing. I mean,
And the bigger point, the point that I make constantly on this program is that business is a game, and it's a game I'm all in favor of people playing. I think it's great people can, you know, have some passion for something and make a living at it. But it is a game, and there are rules to games. And the first rule of the game of business in the United States of America should be, we are going to allow you to make money as long as what you do either serves or at least doesn't harm the American public. And we've lost sight of that. I mean, that's an old and traditional thing, but we've just lost sight of it. Todd, thanks for the call. I got to boogie along here.
I'm great.
Okay, thanks. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman with you. We're going to hear from Herbert Hoover right after this break. Herbert Hoover, an appropriate person given that George W. Bush's the first president since Herbert Hoover to have actually lost jobs on his watch. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
New analysis from researchers at the University of California at Berkeley portend a troublesome future for workers in Silicon Valley. They predict 1 in 6 current high-tech jobs in the Valley could be sent overseas in the coming years. For the total U.S. workforce, the risk of being outsourced is 1 in 10. They also forecast a rise in offshoring for more clerical-type work, like jobs involving paralegal skills or the processing of medical and insurance claims.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working 2 or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by 2 factors, a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at 2 of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Our world has begun to spin like a Ferris wheel. The threat of world annihilation is getting very real. And what a hope in happiness, are they forever lost? Or we just step in and prevent another holocaust?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Monday, March 29th, 254 days, day 254 since the outing of Valerie Plame, bringing down an entire CIA counterterrorism operation by this administration as part of a revenge program against Joe Wilson. 308 days since the search for weapons of mass destruction commenced, 894 days since the Patriot Act was put before Congress and Pat Leahy and Tom Daschle started saying, Pat Leahy, head of the Senate Judiciary Committee that had to allow the Patriot Act out to be voted on, and Tom Daschle, the head of the Democrats, were saying, well, we don't know about this Patriot Act thing. I mean, this is pretty extreme. And all of a sudden, these two guys, 894 days ago, get anthrax in the mail. Just these two guys have to leave their offices until after the bill has been voted on. 905 days since Osama bin Laden was declared wanted, dead or alive. Anyhow, I want to just share with you real quickly Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover, the former president of the United States, Herbert Hoover's thoughts on what happens when an administration, now he in this case was speaking of the Wilson administration, he still didn't think we should have gone into World War I, and he was arguing strongly that we should not try to slow down Germany. And these are comments that Herbert Hoover made in 1931 after he was no longer president. Oh, no, wait a minute, 31. He was still president in 31. And here he is, the last president before George W. Bush to have lost millions of jobs on his watch. But interesting comment this Republican president makes.
We ourselves, when we entered the war, imitated the others. We created great propaganda agencies. And no man dared to question our answer under that fierce organized condemnation.
Fierce organized condemnation. He goes on.
And here we can examine one of the methods of power politics, and that is propaganda. During the World War, propaganda was first developed into an actual weapon no less potent than the killing of men. When peoples and governments weigh the sacrifice of their sons, then truth and honesty and tolerance and justice are thrown to the winds if a lie will serve better.
He was speaking explicitly. I mean, I've got the whole speech. I could play it in context, but trust me, he was speaking about propaganda directed by a government toward its own people to promote war. And then, you know, we get Colin Powell. This, you know, caught on tape here. Secretary of State Colin Powell on CBS's Face the Nation asked the question very bluntly.
Mr. Secretary, a group called the Center for American Progress has posed this question. If, as the administration claims, the White House did make terrorism a priority, why did Vice President Cheney wait 5 months to establish a terrorism task force, which then never met?
With respect to the task force, I can't answer the specific question.
Why? We created Cheney created a task force on terrorism in May, and we took power in January, and he created this thing in May, and he also had a task force on energy. You'll recall it met 11 times behind closed doors, created an energy policy which apparently included invading Iraq. Judicial Watch, the conservative organization, on their website, they've sued Dick Cheney. This is the case that's going before the Supreme Court next week. Or the next month, rather, that Scalia refuses to recuse himself from. And they found from this early meeting, April of 2001, a map of Iraq carved up with a list of potential purchasers of Iraqi oil. What is George Bush's vision for America? Greater and greater oil dependence, that seems for sure. This is Tom Hartman. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Early this month, MCI finished the overhaul of its books from its WorldCom era, and the damage from the company's fraud-laden collapse in 2002 totals a record $74.4 billion. The restatement completely wipes profits off the books from 2000 onward. MCI attributes more than $14 billion directly to the financial misdeeds of previous executives now facing criminal charges. The rest of its loss, it says, is from depreciation tied to the ongoing slump in the telecom sector as a whole.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On the layoff watch, MCI will cut 4,000 people, 7% of its workforce, beginning in May. It blames the National Do Not Call telemarketing registry for its decision. MCI call centers in five states are affected. And as part of its announcement of first quarter results on Wednesday, electronics chain Best Buy may also announce layoffs of its own. The company's targeting 6,800 workers, or an average of about 11 layoffs at each Best Buy store in the United States. Best Buy also plans to outsource some of its back office, IT, and call center jobs.
General strikes are unheard of in the United States, but on Friday, Italian workers staged their fourth national general strike in only 2 years. Banks, schools, rail lines, postal services, and more were shut down in protest of Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's center-right economic policies. Italian unions are united against the government's efforts to invoke stricter pension requirements, unpopular education reforms, and cuts to social programs.
The UK fishing industry faces extinction unless nearly half of the country's fishing vessels are taken out of commission immediately, so says a new government report. Rampant overfishing and a lack of substantive British or European regulations to curtail the practice lie squarely at the center of the problem. If the report were to become policy, it would throw nearly 6,000 people out of work. The British fishing industry is already contracted by a full third in the last decade. This plan would slash the fleet by a further 43%.
72 employees at New York City's Oyster Bar restaurant can finally go back to work after being on strike for nearly 4 months. Few details of the three-year agreement were released on Friday, but it was revealed that Oyster Bar will not be able to retain all of the replacement workers hired. All striking workers have the right to return to their jobs. Wages will increase by $7 to $8 per week, and pension and health plans will remain copayment free.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For working Americans, the economy is stagnant, but for corporate executives, happy days are here again. Spot analyses of the 2003 financial statements from the 200 largest companies in the country shows bonuses for senior executives are approaching the record levels of 1999 and 2000. What's different this time around, though, is instead of taking large grants of stock or stock options as a bonus, executives are opting for straight-up cash payments. Those rose nearly 20% from 2002.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. You're in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, our web station. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Jim driving through Kentucky's on the line. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Tom. I've got three quick points. You ask a question about the direction of the country. Grover Norquist can probably answer that question.
Yeah, he told Mara Liasson in May of 2002 that his goal wasn't to destroy government, but to shrink it down to the size where he could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Well, I believe he's doing that.
Yeah.
No, the second thing is I heard on Amy Goodman's show this morning that Condoleezza Rice is going to be leaving the administration at the end of the year. Nobody's talking about it, but that's the plan, I understand.
I'm surprised she hasn't fallen on her sword yet, frankly.
I don't know. I'm so concerned about this country right now. We've got to get rid of this man. He's destroying this country, and from every fabric of this country, he's destroying it. And we just got to get out there and vote this year, whether we like it or not. And we just got to get this guy out of there.
Yeah, well said, Jim. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. And This is a really pivotal time. This is perhaps one of the most important elections. I mean, we didn't realize how critical the election was of Reagan and Carter when Jimmy Carter was. I mean, he was way ahead in the polls. He was 6 points ahead in the polls 4 months out. And then George Bush goes to Paris, you know, and the students take the American hostages and who are released to the minute. On the moment Reagan gets inaugurated, and Jimmy Carter just got creamed by it, you know, by that October surprise. I mean, it was just, Barbara Ehrlichman, who wrote the book October Surprise, just lays it out. She says, you know, this was. But anyway, we didn't realize what a critical election that was. That it was the beginning of the conservative takeover of America. And, you know, taking us back to a world and a world view that was entirely consistent with the 1880s and 1890s. In fact, Karl Rove has talked about this. The McKinley administration was his model, where you had no middle class. You have the very wealthy and the working poor. And that's it. The middle class is an artifact of government intervention. If government doesn't say, okay, here are the rules of the game of business. You have to pay a living wage. To use a phrase that Teddy Roosevelt coined, you have to pay a living wage. You can't just, you know, if that doesn't happen, if government is not proceeding with rational trade policies, if government isn't holding decent economic policies, you know, holding currency stable, the whole structure of business sits on the substrate of government. Anyhow, it's a rant you've heard before. 23 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, you want my opinion of what his vision is?
What's George Bush's vision for America?
First, I think this guy is a liar. He's a cheat. He's a coward. And I think his vision of the world, not just America, is 1,000 people for every job.
Yeah.
And him and his daddy and their crony criminal enterprise get to sit at the throne of power and throw just enough crumbs that the people don't revolt in the street. But basically, that's about it.
Yeah. Well said, Armin. Well said. It's tough times we have here in America. Tough times. 1-866-889-8894. I got a quick conservative. Well, actually, let's take Dave in Humboldt County's call here first. Dave's been sitting on the line here for a minute. Hey, Dave, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
I no longer harbor the belief that I had. I believed that we were dealing with kind of a well-meaning boob. He had his heart in the right place, but all kinds of dumb policies.
Well, that's how he portrayed himself during the campaign of 2000.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, I'm now convinced that we have a pretty serious psychopathic pattern in place here. It is a pattern of grabbing what you can, stealing from the poor, giving to the rich, and operating at all times on the idea that you can deceive, you can fool most of the people most of the time. But
yeah.
If you fail at that, you certainly can rig elections, and I think that's how we got this man in office. I believe it's fully his intent to do it again, have his high-tech hacker goons working on the voting.
Well, did you see where there was a story in the paper over the weekend, I think it was in the New York Times, about how the something about all the folks in Florida, the Catherine Harris, the 90,000 folks that she threw off the voting rolls because their names were similar to those of felons in the state of Texas, and this in mostly Democratic and black neighborhoods, that they're still not back on. You know, during the 2002 election, they had to be kept off so that Jeb could get reelected. They're still not back on the voting rolls.
Well, there's an article you would enjoy. It's in the current issue of Harper Magazine, April. It's page 87, and it tells the story of how we can, anybody with any modicum of high-tech knowledge can rig the next, the 2004 election. It spells out four very clear ways in which you or I don't think me, I'm not that high-tech knowledgeable, but anybody that knows anything about computers can go in and rig these elections.
Yeah, it's it's not rocket science, Dave. It's this is 15-year-old hacker stuff.
Well, it means that the FBI is going to be having some competition. They had planned to be the implement of Bush's reelection, but now I guess just about anybody can go in and do it too.
What amazes me is that the legislation which Rush Holt put into the House, and I forget who sponsored the Senate version, that would basically create a paper trail and make these make voter fraud with these electronic machines difficult, nearly impossible, certainly not impossible, but far more difficult, is almost unanimously supported by the Democrats, and very, very few Republicans have signed on to this, and the House leadership and the Senate leadership have made it clear that they're not going to bring this thing to the floor for a vote. And I would think that the Republicans, you know, as soon as they get a whiff of, hey, we may not control this thing forever, I think that there's just this incredible hubris that they think that they are invincible, that this is their 40-year, this is their FDR era, right? And but if they get this whiff that they may not control the thing forever, that they should be going, hey, you know, Democrats know how to rig voting machines too. You know, this is not a partisan issue.
It has been perfectly logical for them to assume that they have all of their own psychopathic people in federal agencies right now, the FBI, with all of the skill. Therefore,
well, I'm frankly, Dave, far more concerned about the employees of the private corporations who own the machines and who are holding the software of the machines as a proprietary trade secret and not allowing government people to. I mean, you talk about government employees, you're talking about people who, in most cases, have, like Richard Clark, have committed a lifetime of their, you know, of service to the government and are not doing it for partisan purposes. I'm much more concerned about the private stuff. It's that's the, you know, the guy that put together apparently the Rob Georgia file, you know, was a computer programmer from Canada. You know, I mean, of all things. Anyhow, Dave, I got to move along. Thanks for the call.
It's overwhelming at times.
Yeah, it is. Thanks for the call. Thanks for listening on KGOE out there in Eureka, California, too. I appreciate it. We have a conservative alert. Time is running out. This from conservativealerts.com. Our hotel headquarters, the DoubleTree Crystal City at National Airport, is going to let our block of reserved rooms go this Tuesday, March 30th. There's only a few rooms left. If you're planning on coming to take part in this great protest, you need to reserve your room now. Now, what is this about? Well, on April 23rd through 25th, there's going to be a march in Washington, D.C., and it's going to be a bunch of liberals. And the Conservative Alert folks say all these tens of thousands of radical liberals will be marching from the Lincoln Memorial to the National Mall. But they made a critical mistake. They failed to secure the sidewalks midpoint along their parade route. And now we have a permit for 8 blocks of sidewalk on both sides of the parade route. The march of the radical leftists will have to pass through 8 blocks of peaceful, hardworking, patriotic Americans holding up various signs and banners promoting conservative values and denouncing all of these socialists hold dear. But to accomplish this monumental task, we need your help. Can you help out today with a donation of $1,500, $250, $100? Never before have mainstream conservatives from across America converged on Washington, D.C. to confront the legions of hate America liberalism. But the time has come for the silent majority to speak up loud and clear to let those out-of-touch wackos know that we will no longer sit idly by while they occupy our streets carrying signs comparing President Bush to Hitler and other such nonsense. This battle at this moment in our history matters. The Battle of Britain did not end the Nazi war menace over England, but it was a turning point in the war. Each battle matters, and each victory matters. Even though we are not yet victorious to the fullest desire of our hearts, each time we show up on the field of battle and contend for truth and justice, we inspire our troops and demoralize theirs. Courtesy of conservativealerts.com. Is it .com or .org? .com. Yes, indeed. Our conservative alert for the day, probably for the week. I don't know. There's a limit to how many of those things I can do. The lines are all lit up here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. David from Missouri is on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Tom. Oh, you cracked me up. A moment of levity.
There you go. Well, these guys are serious. I mean, they've, you know, there's this march going on in April 23rd.
I get those emails.
Yeah, incredible.
I get them from everywhere.
Yeah, me too.
Got to look at both sides. Two things. The one I called about and the one you made me think of as I listened to you.
Okay.
We need to take back the dialogue and the vocabulary and clearly label the conservatives and the neocons and clearly label the liberals and the leftist socialists and define the difference and get the language back. But the reason I called
is I agree.
I disagree that electing a president this year is the most important issue that we face.
No, it's electing Congress is the most important thing.
There you go. Yeah. I gave your producer, I guess he is there, my analogy how it works. If you look at this thing like a pyramid,
yep.
The White House staff and the president sits at the peak. You got the U.S. Congress at the next layer, the judiciary beneath that, the governors and the state legislatures beneath that, county and city elected officials beneath that, and at the very bottom layer you have this really strong thing called a foundation, and that's us. That's we the people. And I believe that just knocking the top off of that pyramid and changing the first or second layer really doesn't change anything unless we make serious foundational changes. I've read a ton of the material you have on your website, the corporate rule and the judiciary secretary making the head notes about the decision in 1886 and so many things. I find you to be probably one of the most balanced, well-researched thinkers of everybody out here. I mean, I used to get all jazzed about Rush 12, 13 years ago, and then Farah, and Sean Hannity is enough to give me a headache and make me nauseous nowadays. And then you got this guy, Eddie Schultz, that... I don't know. He needs to calm down and listen to your show.
I think he does a good job. I don't want to get into the radio wars, as it were. But I've heard Ed Schultz. I think he does a great job, and I'm pleased he's out there. I mean, what we need are more voices on the other side. And frankly, I don't want Rush and Sean and those guys to go away. I think that there really needs to be. We need to go back to a time in America where you could get your news from a source that was honest about its bias. You know,
Here's the thing that I see wrong with what's going on with some of those outlets, and I called Eddie Schultz about this, is the demagoguery that I see just overbearing in those program formats that I don't find on your show. You try to deal with things in a much more articulate and factual basis.
Well, thank you. Thank you, David.
And stay away.
Be careful, though. You'll get me bounced off radio. People think I'm too rational. David.
Last night I read the thread in the forums, the one that's titled The Radio Program, I believe.
Yeah, we've got it on the message board. Yeah.
Yeah, there were two persons in there. I can't recall their error names.
Screen names.
Going back and forth about the... the socialist versus the capitalist discourse. Well, you've got some pretty articulate readers in your forum.
Yeah, there's some really smart people. And what's really interesting is there's a couple of people in there. You know, we know now that a couple of these conservative think tanks actually pay people to go into chat rooms and participate and present the conservative viewpoint.
And debate.
Yeah, and debate. And there's two of them in there that have been in there for a year consistently every single day, and clearly, in my mind anyway, that, you know, they're part of that legion. And it's actually, I think, a good thing because they keep everybody honest. You know, they keep the discussion going, and it's fascinating to watch. David, I got to move along. We had a couple other calls here. Thanks
for the
call.
Take care, Tom.
Okay, do good. And drive safely there. Let's see, Chris in New Mexico, listening on KTRC, is on about Condi the Hutt.
About Condi the Hutt, yeah.
Okay, Chris.
First, I want to say I disagree about the level of importance between the presidential election and the congressional election, because Bush appoints new Supreme Court justices, and Bush is the commander-in-chief, and sorry, he's got to go.
Yeah, and the presidency has become a bully pulpit, but the bottom line, though, is that Bush would not be able to advance the agenda that he has been advancing, and his administration would not have been able to get away with the open crimes that they have committed.
If
either one of the houses of Congress was democratically controlled, and therefore things like the Watergate hearing or the inquiries into Bill Clinton's sex life if that kind of stuff could come out. So, you know, that's a good point. Thanks a lot. Tom Hartman here with you 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores? Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
End of the early British War. The young land started growing, the young blood started flowing, but I ain't a marching anymore.
And welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of America. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 4 minutes before the hour. Hey, Chris, in New Mexico there, I dropped you after, you know, when we hit the bumper music, and I realized after I did that you never did get to talk about Condi the Hutt, the topic that you'd called about. So feel free to call back in the next hour. 1-866-889-8894. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Israel in New York City is on the line. Hey, Israel.
How you doing, Tom?
Great. How are you?
I went this weekend on your website, and I saw that Fantine, the character, you know, it was interesting. It was funny. What I'm calling about, it's I heard that on the weekend on one of the talk show about the farm bill, that it's going they're going to get away with the subsidy to the farms.
Yeah, but it's not quite subsidies to farms. It's subsidies to huge multinational corporations that control about 80% of American agriculture.
Yeah, but then you're going to import food also, so I don't know what's going to be left.
Yeah, well, we're also exporting food. I mean, this is one of the reasons why there's these huge barrios around the big cities in Central and South America, is because we are exporting corn so cheaply. I mean, we're subsidizing the growing of it, and it's so cheap to buy American corn in Mexico that it's cheaper than local Mexican farmers who are simply living on their own land can grow it. They're going out of business, and they're losing their land, and they're ending up in the cities, in the slums, looking for work. And this is a real problem. I mean, this is what brought down the Cancun talks, the trade talks. Anyhow, I interrupted you.
I think that food in America, it's basically cheap. That's the basic thing that it's good about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were that away with that, the food will be really expensive here also.
Although, there was a report last week, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal, that food prices went up 3% in the last quarter, largely because of transportation costs, but it's happening.
That's the second thing that I want. Now, Vicente Fox is the body of George Bush, and I feel that after the election, they're going to let, I'm a truck driver, they're going to let Mexicans come and work here as a truck driver.
Yeah.
I won't be able to compete with them.
Yeah, well, they already are. They are already are, Israel, and it's going to be a real challenge. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. This is the core of the Bush administration strategy, the whole conservative agenda, cheap labor. You can boil the whole thing down to two words, cheap labor, as conceptualguerrilla.com points out so well. Anyhow, this is the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The newsletter factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the newsletter factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the newsletter factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice is waging a vigorous defense of her actions in every public forum except one, the September 11th commission, where she would be questioned about the government's failure to prevent the terrorist attacks. Interviewed on CBS 60 Minutes, Rice also said she'd like to meet with the families of the September 11th victims. Kristen Breitweiser, whose husband Ronald died in New York's World Trade Center, said, "I'd love to meet with Rice as long as it's under oath and it's live in front of television cameras." Rice should come out and explain what the National Security Advisor knew, didn't know, and what kind of information was passed to the president and didn't get passed, said Lori Van Auken, widow of another World Trade Center victim. Commission member John Layman, a Republican, called the refusal to testify a political blunder of the first order. The early campaign skirmishes between George W. Bush and Democratic challenger John Kerry have taken a toll on public attitudes towards both men, pollsters say, with many voters already growing weary of the race's negative tone. Kerry, the target of weeks of Bush attack ads in key battleground states, has been hit the hardest. He has suffered a slight dip in his personal ratings and has fallen behind or into a dead heat with Bush in most national surveys after holding small leads earlier in the month. But some polls also show Bush's approval rating softening, even before he was hit last week with the controversy over former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark's allegations that Bush neglected the terror threat before the September 11th attacks. Iraq's U.S.-led administration Sunday shut down a newspaper that is a mouthpiece for radical Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadr, accusing it of publishing articles that incite violence against American troops. U.S. soldiers handed the paper's editor a letter from U.S. Civil Administrator Paul Bremer, citing a breach of an order issued last year that bans incitement to violence. The letter refers to a series of articles that said incited hatred, including an editorial entitled "Bremer Follows the Steps of Saddam." Hundreds of Shiites later gathered in Baghdad to protest the ban on the newspaper. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
An Oklahoma couple were surprised when they woke up and found a drunk burglary suspect asleep in bed with them, police said on Thursday. The couple from the South Oklahoma city of Ardmore called police, ran out of their house, and watched officers arrest the man, who was still sleeping in their bed despite the sirens and commotion. Dan Johnson, 24, was arrested on the scene in the incident that took place on Sunday and was charged with burglary. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Sometimes when I see those in power pull some political action that's stupid, I say to myself, what were they thinking? But a recent action by the Bushites is so obtuse, so blindingly stupid, that you can only conclude that no thought at all was involved, that no one with the brain power of a single-cell amoeba could have been consulted on such a perverse decision. The Bush incident revolved around a bit of political fluff that the White House tried to foist on us last Labor Day. With his jobs record rivaling Herbert Hoover's, and with every industry from manufacturing to high-tech sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs offshore, Bush's political handlers decided that he needed to do something. Not really do something in the sense of stopping our country's middle-class bleeding, but appear to do something.
So George announced that he was creating, ta-da, a new Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing. Big whoopee. A new bureaucrat to do what? To be a cheerleader and provide political cover, of course. That was stupid. But then came stupid on steroids. 6 months after announcing this position, Bush finally got around to appointing his new manufacturing czar. It was Anthony Raimondo, a Bush campaign contributor and the CEO of a manufacturing outfit in Nebraska. Fine, since he's from the biz, he might have an actual idea about how to stop offshoring. But no. Guess who had recently fired 75 of his own corporation's U.S. workers and built a new factory in China to employ 180 workers? Yes, Anthony, our new czar. This is Jim Hightower saying, this was too embarrassing, even for Bush's White House of big blunders, so Anthony's name was withdrawn. But it shows how clueless the Bushites are. As Senator Charles Schumer put it, this White House is so bad at jobs, it can't even fill the one it created.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited, so you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Who was behind America's weapons of mass destruction claims about this, the big one, the mobile trailers, the one that I remember for about a week, every single newscast, it seemed, faux news was, we found them. It's a mobile trailer, these bioweapons. And you saw Colin Powell before the United Nations. He said, here's a quote. First-hand descriptions of biological weapons factories on wheels and on rails. He said that they had first-hand descriptions capable of producing enough anthrax or botulism toxin to kill, quote, thousands upon thousands of people, end quote. He showed, quote, highly detailed and extremely accurate, end quote, diagrams. This is from an article by Andrew Gumbel in Los Angeles in the Guardian, or the Independent today, UK newspaper. Diagrams of how the trucks were configuring. Revealingly, Gumbel notes, Powell could only produce artistic renditions, not actual blueprints or photographs. This is the weapon that Dick Cheney, just 8 or 9 weeks ago, was on national television and said, well, these things are there. We found one of these bioweapons. No, we didn't. We found a trailer to make hydrogen to fill up balloons that go up to measure the wind so that you can calibrate gunnery. Forget what you call those great big guns that, you know, artillery. And that's what we found. But anyhow, it turns out, where did this information come from? It was an asset of the German intelligence service, and his code name was Curveball. And the Pentagon and the CIA never did know who he was, according to Los Angeles Times. And it turns out now that apparently he was the brother of Ahmed Chalabi, the convicted bank swindler who's now sort of the head of Iraq. leader of the Iraqi National Congress. And David Kay said in the Los Angeles Times, quote, "If Powell had said to the Security Council, 'It's one source, we never actually talked to him, and we don't know his name,' I think people would have laughed us out of court," end quote. Of course, the court being the court of public opinion, the United Nations. Spin, spin, spin it goes. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Chris in New Mexico is back. Hey, Chris, sorry about that. The break caught me, and I just off went the brain. What's up?
Unloved, but that's
there we go.
Okay. I just Condi the Hutt, did you mention just a few minutes ago Colin Powell? Did you hear how he broke ranks with the Bush administration?
When, where?
Well, you had pointed out that Richard Clark called Bill Frist's bluff and said, "Yeah, go ahead, declassify everything, including my emails." Well, they asked Powell about that on Face the Nation. And the quote they have here, this is an AP story, said, "My bias will be to provide this information in an unclassified manner, not only to the commission, but to the American people."
Yeah.
That's breaking ranks. You know, I was listening to
the interview. Yeah, yes and no. I saw the interview, and it seemed to me like he was doing a whole lot of, you know, parsing words carefully and spinning the thing as well as he could, as he has to. I mean, you know, he has seen what happens to people who tell the truth in this administration. They get fired. They don't just get fired. They get destroyed.
I was listening to an interview with Ron Suskind, who wrote the Paul O'Neill book about character assassination and whatnot coming up. And he pointed out, he said, look, one of the problems with the Bush White House is that they have secrecy loops that are so tight that the Secretary of State doesn't know what's going on half the time.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's a real problem for them.
Yeah, a very real problem, and a very real problem for us. I mean,
that's
the bigger issue, is that the United States, we went charging into Iraq on phony intelligence that Cheney and Rumsfeld were cooking up, and with first source raw intelligence that was never properly vetted over the objections of the intelligence services, and it's tragic. It's really tragic.
Well,
and you see these.
Have a good day, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Chris. Thanks for the call. You see these young men and women, and Chris Matthews did a thing on him last Friday, where he actually got into I think it was Walter Reed, and you know they have to believe this myth. I mean, I remember in my generation the Vietnam veterans, you know, friends of mine coming back wounded. And they had to, so many of them came back, and their response is one of two things. Either they hung on tenaciously to the belief that they didn't lose their leg for the political gain of some hack, you know, Lyndon Johnson or Richard Nixon, that there was actually a noble purpose, that we had to stop communism in Vietnam or it would end up in Japan. And they held to that. Or their pain became rage. And they joined the anti-war movement, and it's so poignant, so sad, so tragic. 1-866-889-8894. Harry is listening in on WSDS there in Michigan.
Yeah, hello.
Hey, Harry, you're live and on the air.
Yeah, hi. I would like to talk about the moral dilemma our patriotic, super patriotic president is in. I guess you heard about the National Guard sergeant in Florida who came back from Iraq on leave, and he was supposed to go back on duty, and he kind of got lost.
He's now claiming conscientious objector status,
yes,
along with a couple
so,
of other people, yeah.
So, but... he is. So there is a chance of his getting shot, like Private Slovak was in World War II.
Yeah.
If you remember that.
I don't remember it, but I've read of it. Yeah. I'm not old enough
to
remember.
Was a private that cut. Was confused in the war. He was in France, and he walked away. So. So at that time, the commander-in-chief was Eisenhower, and Eisenhower had him shot.
Hmm.
So our president who is a deserter is going to judge another deserter. How can he do it?
Yeah, that is
morally,
a moral dilemma.
He should resign and turn it over to Cheney.
Yeah, that is a moral dilemma. You got George Bush, who got out of the National Guard 6 months early because he wanted to.
How did he get out? So,
well, he and, said
and,
it was
and he was due to get it, and he was due to get tested, and he never showed up for the test.
Yeah, that
how
was
do you do that and get away with that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was when they started the random drug testing. Suddenly, George Bush stopped showing up for the test. And then he got out of the National Guard 6 months early because he was accepted into the Yale Business School and that or Harvard Business School rather I'm sure that a lot of these guys would love to say, hey, you know, I'd like to go back to college. Why don't you let me out early? I don't think it's going to happen though.
I don't think
it's going to happen.
And how is he able to quit the Texas National Guard and get into the Alabama National Guard and never show up?
Yeah, well, it helps if your daddy's a congressman. Harry, thanks for the call. You raise a good point. This is a moral dilemma, and our country is facing so many of them, and it's such a difficult thing. The Cheney versus U.S. District Court is going to be heard before the Supreme Court next month. This is the biggie. This case. And I think this is the reason why Scalia is refusing to recuse himself, for the same reason that two of the Supreme Court justices had clear, you know, they had family members who worked for the various Republican candidates of the Republican Party in 2000, and yet they didn't recuse themselves from Bush v. Gore. And that was Rehnquist and Clarence Thomas. And now you got Scalia. If he recuses himself, there's a chance that Dick Cheney might lose this case. And if Dick Cheney loses this case, and the truth comes out about Dick Cheney's energy meetings in April of 2001, at least what looks like the truth, I mean, we know that they are aggressively trying to hide these things. So we don't know for sure what they're trying to hide. But Judicial Watch, the conservative organization whose lawsuit in the Jennifer Flowers case busted open the Monica Lewinsky scandal in the Clinton administration, Judicial Watch has sued Dick Cheney for having these meetings. He was too busy to have meetings of the terrorism committee, the terrorism task force that he was the head of. But he wasn't too busy to have meetings of the Energy Task Force. And the Energy Task Force in April of 2001 produced a series of documents carving up the oil fields of Iraq and listing potential suitors, potential purchasers. Listed pipelines, refineries, terminals, and foreign suitors for Iraqi oil field contracts. That was the title of one of the documents that came out of the Cheney March of 2001 Energy Task Force meeting. Now, we still don't know exactly who he met with. There's a good, you know, it's reasonable to assume Ken Lay was there, his buddies in the other various oil companies. Be interesting to know if anybody from any of the interests, any of the oil companies or interests that are participating now in Afghanistan and Iraq were there, if Halliburton was there. But, you know, it'd be interesting to know. But what would be really the smoking gun, and the reason I think why Scalia wrote this remarkable 21-page rationale for why he doesn't want to recuse himself, is that if this case, if Cheney loses this case before the Supreme Court and has to tell the American people what he was doing while he was on their payroll, and who was at the meeting that was held that's supposed to be about the public's business to create the energy task, the energy policy for the United States of America, that if he has to do that, what may come out is that they were planning the invasion of Iraq in March of 2001. As is implied in Bob Woodward's book, Bush at War, and as Paul O'Neill, the former Commerce Secretary, our Treasury Secretary, comes right out and says, this administration, within a week of its inauguration, was planning a war on Iraq. And we know now that less than 2 weeks after 9/11, George Bush signed an authorization. But this was even before that. Could this be the smoking gun? Might this be the thing that will bring them down? Time will tell. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman with you. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
You.
What?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Mm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to Solutions for Progress Incorporated, American workers are 81% more productive today than they were in 1968, and corporate profits are 39% higher when adjusted for inflation. But minimum wage workers earn nearly 40% less than their counterparts did a generation ago. The lowest paid workers received $1.65 an hour in 1968, the equivalent of $8.45 in 2003.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now that gay marriage is the new boy in town, they'll amend the Constitution just to keep you down. They say the gay lifestyle is perverted and odd. Well, they should know best. They're always talking to God. Sex and religion, it's sex and religion. That old-time religion should pack up and leave.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman with you, 25 minutes past the hour. Speaking of the Constitution, this morning I read the Iraqi interim Constitution. There was an article in the newspaper about how Saturday or Sunday, Sistani, you know, the Grand Ayatollah, the head of the Shiites, 60% of Iraq, the head of the Shiites said that he had problems with Article 61 of the Iraqi Constitution. And if this thing wasn't changed, he was going to declare a fatwa, or issue a fatwa, rather. A fatwa is sort of like an encyclical from the Pope. You know, it's a proclamation. I don't know if fatwas are spoken in the name of God the way when the Pope sits in his chair, and I'm not sure that that's an encyclical. I'm not Catholic, so I don't remember all the terms. But in any case, it's basically a statement saying this is how it is. And he said that he was going to declare this fatwa, saying that people should not participate with the government, and that the government was not legitimate. And of course, if he does that, I mean, this could lead to civil war. It could bring the whole thing down. So I looked up Article 61 to see what he was talking about, and it's the article that has to do with when things happen. And, you know, that in June of this year, all this stuff is happening. In December, they're going to have elections and all that stuff. And so, you know, it appears to me that what Sistani is trying to do is he's trying to buy some time, presumably to consolidate his power, his political power around the country, presumably so that he can say, it's democracy? Sure, we're all in favor of, the good old pure democracy form where the majority rules and the minorities have no say. I don't think he wants to go with what we have in the United States, you know, a constitutionally limited democratic republic, which we generally refer to as a democracy. The rest of the world refers to it as liberal democracy. We haven't called it that since the rise of Rush Limbaugh, largely, Newt Gingrich. But in any case, I was reading through the Iraqi Constitution, and I came across Article 14. I thought this was really interesting. I thought you might want to know about this. This is the Constitution of Iraq. Iraq, of course, just a moment ago, I was mentioning how about the Cheney Task Force, we do know Dick Cheney's thoughts on this.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserves, second only to Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. So, George Bush has said that that's a resource for the Iraqi people. Well, here, Article 14 of the Iraqi Constitution. The individual has the right to security, education, health care, and social security. The Iraqi state and its governmental units shall strive to provide prosperity and employment opportunities to the people. So the Iraqi Constitution mandates universal health care, which they have right now, a social security system, and that the government will be the employer of last resort, as we had in the United States during the Great Depression with Roosevelt's Works Progress Administration, the WPA. If you can't find a job anywhere else, we'll build some bridges, we'll put in some forests, we'll build the national parks, we'll find something for people to do, because we know that, you know, the best welfare program is a job, even if it has to be a job working for the government to get you through. And you know, it just got us through, and then things picked up again. So that's fine for Iraq. It's not going to happen in the United States. But that's fine for Iraq, and it's quite surprising. I encourage you to check it out. You can find it easily on the web, the Iraqi Constitution, the interim Constitution. The individual has the right to security, education, health care, and social security. 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. I got an incredible scandal here to share with you right after this break. Stick around.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking?
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On the layoff watch, MCI will cut 4,000 people, 7% of its workforce, beginning in May. It blames the National Do Not Call telemarketing registry for its decision. MCI call centers in five states are affected. And as part of its announcement of first quarter results on Wednesday, electronics chain Best Buy may also announce layoffs of its own. The company's targeting 6,800 workers, or an average of about 11 layoffs at each Best Buy store in the United States. Best Buy also plans to outsource some of its back office IT and call center jobs.
General strikes are unheard of in the United States, but on Friday, Italian workers staged their fourth national general strike in only 2 years. Banks, schools, rail lines, postal services, and more were shut down in protest of Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's center-right economic policies. Italian unions are united against the government's efforts to invoke stricter pension requirements, unpopular education reforms, and cuts to social programs.
The UK fishing industry faces extinction unless nearly half of the country's fishing vessels are taken out of commission immediately. So says a new government report. Rampant overfishing and a lack of substantive British or European regulations to curtail the practice lie squarely at the center of the problem. If the report were to become policy, it would throw nearly 6,000 people out of work. The British fishing industry is already contracted by a full third in the last decade. This plan would slash the fleet by a further 43%.
72 employees at New York City's Oyster Bar restaurant can finally go back to work after being on strike for nearly 4 months. Few details of the three-year agreement were released on Friday, but it was revealed that Oyster Bar will not be able to retain all of the replacement workers hired. All striking workers have the right to return to their jobs. Wages will increase by $7 to $8 per week, and pension and health plans will remain co-payment free.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For working Americans, the economy is stagnant, but for corporate executives, happy days are here again. Spot analyses of the 2003 financial statements from the 200 largest companies in the country shows bonuses for senior executives are approaching the record levels of 1999 and 2000. What's different this time around, though, is instead of taking large grants of stock or stock options as a bonus, executives are opting for straight-up cash payments. Those rose nearly 20% from 2002.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Drug firm stalled on strokes. Now, this is, I want to put this in the context of a bigger picture issue here and just to share a couple of pieces of it with you. This is like a starting point, and I'm just going to pull on this thread for 5 or 10 minutes here and just follow along. And this is really remarkable. Back, it was in November of 2000. When the FDA declared phenylpropanolamine, PPA,
unsafe and asked the drug companies to stop selling it. Turns out that there were a number of people who had strokes. I mean, hundreds of people across the United States who had strokes from taking this stuff. This was a common ingredient in over-the-counter cold medications. You got a cold, you take something with PPA, it's a cough. It was an anti-cough medication, as I recall. And this article in the Los Angeles Times, March 28th edition, Drug Firms Stalled on Strokes, just, you know, lays it out quite clearly that the drug companies for several years, I mean, going back to 1982, knew that this stuff, well, here's to quote an FDA report, quote, had the ability to cause cardiovascular effects, cerebral hemorrhage, and cardiac arrhythmias, end quote. Cerebral hemorrhage is a fancy word for strokes. 2 years later, a memo from the Medical Services Department, this is in 84, at Sandoz Pharmaceuticals, which made the PPA products Triaminic and Tavis D, referred to PPA as, quote, an agent known to cause hypertension and stroke, end quote. In 1999, there was a Yale University study that came out laying this stuff out, and the drug companies went into hyperdrive. Well, here, to quote the LA Times, the drug makers opened a relentless assault on its methodology and on the integrity of the Yale University researchers who conducted the study. And then in November of 2000, when it became obvious that the FDA was going to pull this stuff because so many people were dying or suffering permanent brain damage, 2 weeks after, and this, again, from the Los Angeles Times, drug firms stalled on strokes, article on the 28th. 2 weeks after an FDA advisory panel concluded that PPA could be hazardous, an official with Bayer, which made Alka-Seltzer Plus with PPA, proposed a draft PPA crisis action memo. Its stated objectives: delay mandatory implementation of FDA recommendation, blunt PR impact by highlighting questionable study concerns as they pertain to cough cold products, and begin shipping PPA-free products as soon as possible. Now, the lawyer for Bayer says that the plan wasn't implemented, but the LA Times notes, records and interviews show that the industry largely followed that course. So you've got this, you know, this dance between the federal government and industry working in a way that really, you know, the industry really didn't get harmed by this. They were able to put this thing off long enough that they could get alternative products in the pipeline, and, you know, everything was just kind of cool. And the only people who got harmed were folks like you and me. Now we have last month, or this month actually, March 10th, a couple weeks ago, the U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday overwhelmingly approved legislation nicknamed the Cheeseburger Bill that would block lawsuits blaming the food industry for making people fat. Now you listen to this and you say, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Somebody eats too much, they get obese. What business do they have claiming that, you know, the government should, that they should have the right to sue McDonald's or, you know, one of the candy bar manufacturers or whatever? It's called the Personal Responsibility in Food Consumption Act. But it was really, this thing was really rushed in. I mean, this was 3 weeks ago. It passed the House of Representatives. It was really rushed in. And a lot of people were wondering, you know, why now? Why is this so important? The bill would block suits in state courts as well as federal courts, and dismiss any that have already been filed, according to a Reuters story by Joanne Keen. A few states have already passed their own bans on fat suits, and others are considering them. Now, we've got this huge epidemic of obesity. Turns out, apparently, the reason that they're rushing this thing out so quickly is because the April issue, which just hit the stands, or just hit the streets, of the scientific journal, is called the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, carries a rather shocking study. The Associated Press reports, researchers say they found more evidence of a link between a rapid rise in obesity and a corn product used to sweeten soft drinks and food since the 1970s. This is the high fructose corn syrup. I've been saying this for a decade, that ever since high fructose corn syrup became the main sweetener, that people started getting fat. Here they point, unlike glucose, a major component in table sugar, fructose doesn't trigger responses in hormones that regulate energy use and appetite. This means fructose is more likely to be converted into fat, the researchers said. So it's like they changed sweeteners on us. I mean, remember the transition from Coke to New Coke? I think I've talked about this. They changed sweeteners on us and apparently knew that it was a problem. And is this like the tobacco industry? Oh, no, nothing wrong with nicotine. And you go back as far as July 19th, 2002, the New York Times, Michael Pollan published an article called When a Crop Becomes King. He pointed out one need look no further than the $190 billion farm bill President Bush signed last month to wonder whose interests are really being served here. Under the 10-year program, taxpayers will pay farmers $4 billion a year to grow ever more corn. This despite the fact that we struggle to get rid of the surplus the plant already produces. The average bushel of corn, 56 pounds, sells today for about $2. It costs farmers more than $3 to grow. Now, why are we doing this? He says, at first blush, the subsidy might look like a handout for farmers, but it's really a form of welfare for the plant itself and for all those economic interests that profit from its overproduction, the processors, factory farms, and the soft drink and snack makers who rely on cheap corn. He suggests that the largest are Archer's Daniel Midland, Tyson's, and Coca-Cola's of the world. And he says it's no coincidence that the wholesale switch to corn sweeteners in the 1980s marks the beginning of the epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes in this country. Now, this was in 2002. This was 2 years ago this came out. This was in the New York Times. A recent study at the University of Minnesota found that a diet high in fructose as compared to glucose, that is corn syrup, elevates triglyceride levels in men shortly after eating, a phenomenon that has been linked to an increased risk of obesity and heart disease. And here we are giving these very, very large corporations billions of dollars to produce this stuff cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Why? It's a subsidy for the fast food industry. It's a subsidy for the candy manufacturers. It's a subsidy for the soft drink manufacturers so that they will have cheap corn syrup to sweeten with. And something that now, it turns out, we're discovering, you eat it, you get diabetes, and you become obese. Even if you try and eat in moderation, apparently. I consider that to be just absolutely unconscionable. Moving along, Ralph Nader said Sunday he's going to meet with John Kerry next month to discuss the effort to defeat President Bush in the November election. This is according to the Associated Press. Nader described the Republican incumbent, that being George W. Bush, as, quote, a giant corporation residing in the White House camouflaged as a human being. He says George W. Bush's values are corporate values. Interesting, at the same time, the Dallas Morning News did an analysis of where Ralph Nader's getting his money. Nearly 10% of the Nader contributors who have given him at least $250 each have a history of supporting the Republican president, national GOP candidates, or the party, according to a computer-assisted review of financial records by the Dallas Morning News, an article by Wayne Slater on March 27th. Among the new crop of Nader donors, actor and former Nixon speechwriter Ben Stein, Florida frozen food magnate John Pelosi, and Pennsylvania oil company executive Terrence Jacobs all have strong ties to the GOP. Mr. Pelucci, the creator of Chung King and Geno's Pizza Rolls, donated $2,000 in February to Mr. Nader. That's the maximum that you can give. The Florida frozen food executive is a prolific contributor to the GOP, giving more than $150,000 to the Republican Party and national candidates since 2000. The article continues, as for Ben Stein's money, the television personality and outspoken advocate for the Republican Party has contributed $500 to Nader and $1,000 to George Bush this year. Records indicate that over the past decade, Mr. Stein has given exclusively to the GOP. He didn't return phone calls seeking comment, strangely enough. The Dallas Morning News story goes on to say others helping Mr. Nader with $2,000 checks are Robert Monks, who lost a Senate race in Maine, and his wife Millicent. Both have a long history of contributing money to Republicans and are financially backing Mr. Bush's re-election. And Ralph Nader is on record as saying he'll take anybody's money. That's democracy. Well, sort of. I know that Ralph Nader is smart enough to know that we don't have instant runoff voting in the United States and that we don't have proportional representation. And therefore, because we have this first-past-the-post, winner-take-all type of electoral system, until we fix it with instant runoff voting, as is happening in communities all across America, but not at the national level yet, until we fix it with instant runoff voting, that a third-party candidate will always hurt the party or the person with whom he or she is most closely philosophically aligned, rather than helping them. That's going to be an interesting meeting. Arnold Schwarzenegger now has done something no other governor of California has ever done before. Brand new. Jim Knox, the executive director of California Common Cause, says he's building an infrastructure to have unprecedented leverage over the legislature. No governor has ever had anything like this before. No one has ever thought of this before. Like many other things about this administration, he's taking us into new ground. Now, what is the this? Schwarzenegger has quietly incorporated, this is according to an article by Tom Chernow in the Associated Press, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has quietly incorporated a private nonprofit group that can help advance his political goals without disclosing the source of its money. He's created a 501c4. 501c3s are charitable organizations. 501c4s are charitable organizations that can lobby. Its mission, it's called the California Recovery Team. And its mission, according to its articles of incorporation, is to, quote, educate the public about the need for government reform and efficiency, which generally is a code word for let's take more tax dollars and give them to large corporations that contribute to us. Now, in the midst of all this partisanship, here comes this fascinating story. John Kerry, I don't know if you saw over the first hour or so that 60 Minutes was going to be on last night, and there was a game that ran into it, and a lot of people were flipping around, and they found the history or the C-SPAN was running an hour of an old Dick Cavett show from 1972, I think it was, or maybe I'm mixing up the years. John Kerry was 27, whatever the year was. In any case, it was an old, and John Kerry was the guest on the Dick Cavett show. And, of course, he was the head at that time of Vietnam Veterans Against the War, VVAW. And he was, it turns out, we've learned now in the last month, he was heavily watched, infiltrated, followed around, harassed, you name it, by the FBI back during this time. And so here we have this CNN story, March 27th, FBI documents about FBI surveillance of John Kerry in the early 1970s have been stolen. According to their owner, a historian who lives near San Francisco, California. I wonder what Daniel Ellsberg would say about this. I mean, this is starting to sound like what he, when he released the Pentagon Papers, they broke into his psychiatrist's office to get negative information about him. This guy, Gerald Nicosia, is a historian who has spent 10 years filing Freedom of Information lawsuits with the government to get declassified and released to him information about John Kerry's years with Vietnam Veterans Against the War and the FBI's interactions with Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And he says, this the guy who got robbed. He says, I hadn't had a chance to review them all, that being all the files that he had, that he'd compiled over the last decade. He says, I'm sure there are some things about John Kerry that weren't known. Those files would also cast a bad light on the Republican Party. This surveillance happened under the Nixon White House and the Nixon FBI, end quote. Who broke into his house? Well, apparently it wasn't just somebody looking for something of value to steal, because clocks and, camera. He said there was a camera sitting by it. It was a very clean burglary, he said. They didn't break any glass. They didn't take anything like cameras sitting by it. It was a very professional job. Police found no signs of forced entry. He says it's heartbreaking. After 11 years trying to get them, these documents, estimated that about 20% of them are missing. Whoever stole them was relatively selective. They knew what they were looking for. What was it that they were looking for? I am really curious. And is it going to show up in the Bush campaign commercials this fall? Here we go again. I mean, is this Nixon all over again or what? 10 minutes before the hour, or 50 minutes after. Tom Hartman with you. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Competition has driven some fisheries into deep trouble. An author sees a sustainable alternative. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Shrinking ocean fisheries are forcing ever tougher competition for what remains. Rod Fujita says that's pushed many fish species to dangerously low numbers. Fujita is the author of a new book called Heal the Ocean.
Nobody owns the fish, so nobody's responsible for them. And that sets up a vicious competition amongst individual fishermen and amongst countries to maximize their share of the catch, which is unspecified. They don't really know how much they're entitled to. So they build large fleets and subsidize them and try to create more powerful gear to catch as much as they can.
Fujita says high-tech fishing equipment and government subsidies are symptoms of a system gone awry, and he says blanket quotas for cod and other species only heated up the competition among fleets. Fujita says the answer lies in two bold steps: creating marine reserves where fishing is banned and in establishing specific catch allowances. He says each country and even individual fishing boats need to know how many fish they can catch each season.
The solution really is to specify use privileges for both individuals and countries so that people will know how much they're entitled to. It can be a percentage of the total allowable catch, for example. And once people have that share in hand, they can plan their businesses around that share rather than planning it around competition.
More than 90 of the world's fisheries are now covered by these individual quotas. British Columbia manages 25 Pacific fish species that way, and Fujita says the results have been good for conservation and for the fishing industry. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I can hear the soft breathing of the girl that I love as she lies here beside me, asleep with the night. And a hail in a fine mist floats on my pillow, reflecting the glow of the winter moonlight. But I've got to creep down the alleyway, fly down the highway.
Welcome back. Talk radio for the rest of America. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 4 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to comment on the day's happenings, all our lines are lit up here. Let's start out with John in Santa Fe and see who can get through before the show is over. Hey, John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom.
What's up?
Yeah, I caught the tail end of your thing on the carry file.
Right.
The Gerald Nicosia.
Yeah, the break-in.
And, I'm not sure if this is something you said earlier, but I saw the CNN thing last night, and one thing they were trying to get him to talk about was supposedly in these files was that the Vietnam veterans at that meeting in Kansas City where someone was talking about potentially assassinating a U.S. senator or senators who supported the war, the Vietnam War. And they repeated that, and the thing about that time period is that all those groups were infiltrated by FBI and agent provocateurs who come in there and then say something like that.
Yeah, I actually was at Michigan State University. I was in an anti-war protest out in front of the Union Building in, it must have been 1968 or 69, and there was a guy in the back of the crowd who started yelling, like, just, you know, violent stuff.
Yep.
And but he was like this really clean-cut guy, you know, and it turned out later that he worked for the Michigan State Police Department at that time. It was they had this unit called the Red Dog Squad or something like that that had infiltrated the anti-war movement, and there was these provocations, you know. Yeah, and the FBI was doing that.
Exactly. So that's probably as good about it as any as to what that was.
Yeah, yeah. This is going to be an interesting one to play out if it gets any. If it sees the light of day, I mean, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with this. Thanks a lot for the call, John, from Santa Fe. Ray in Greensboro, North Carolina. Alan in Texas. If you guys want to hang on, I'll take your calls on the other side of the news here. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 2 minutes before the hour.
Listening to the Tom Hartman program, check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice is waging a vigorous defense of her actions in every public forum except one, the September 11th commission, where she would be questioned about the government's failure to prevent the terrorist attacks. Interviewed on CBS 60 Minutes, Rice also said she'd like to meet with the families of the September 11th victims. Kristen Breitweiser, whose husband Ronald died in New York's World Trade Center, said, "I'd love to meet with Rice as long as it's under oath and it's live in front of television cameras." Rice should come out and explain what the National Security Advisor knew, didn't know, and what kind of information was passed to the president and didn't get passed, said Lori Van Auken, widow of another World Trade Center victim. Commission member John Layman, a Republican, called the refusal to testify a political blunder of the first order. The early campaign skirmishes between George W. Bush and Democratic challenger John Kerry have taken a toll on public attitudes towards both men, pollsters say, with many voters already growing weary of the race's negative tone. Kerry, the target of weeks of Bush attack ads in key battleground states, has been hit the hardest. He has suffered a slight dip in his personal ratings and has fallen behind or into a dead heat with Bush in most national surveys after holding small leads earlier in the month. But some polls also show Bush's approval rating softening, even before he was hit last week with the controversy over former counterterrorism chief Richard Clark's allegations that Bush neglected the terror threat before the September 11th attacks. Iraq's U.S.-led administration Sunday shut down a newspaper that is a mouthpiece for radical Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadr, accusing it of publishing articles that incite violence against American troops. U.S. soldiers handed the paper's editor a letter from U.S. Civil Administrator Paul Bremer, citing a breach of an order issued last year that bans incitement to violence. The letter refers to a series of articles that said incited hatred, including an editorial entitled "Bremer Follows the Steps of Saddam." Hundreds of Shiites later gathered in Baghdad to protest the ban on the newspaper. More news after this.
Did you know that less than 1% of our government's annual budget goes toward helping people in other countries? Helping create a healthy future for people overseas helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121.
An Oklahoma couple were surprised when they woke up and found a drunk burglary suspect asleep in bed with them, police said on Thursday. The couple from the South Oklahoma city of Ardmore called police, ran out of their house, and watched officers arrest the man, who was still sleeping in their bed despite the sirens and commotion. Dan Johnson, 24, was arrested on the scene in the incident that took place on Sunday and was charged with burglary. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Sometimes when I see those in power pull some political action that's stupid, I say to myself, what were they thinking?
But a recent action by the Bushites is so obtuse, so blindingly stupid, that you can only conclude that no thought at all was involved, that no one with the brain power of a single-cell amoeba could have been consulted on such a perverse decision. The Bush incident revolved around a bit of political fluff that the White House tried to foist on us last Labor Day. With his jobs record rivaling Herbert Hoover's, and with every industry from manufacturing to high-tech sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs offshore, Bush's political handlers decided that he needed to do something. Not really do something in the sense of stopping our country's middle-class bleeding, but appear to do something. So, George announced that he was creating, ta-da, a new Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing. Big whoopee. A new bureaucrat to do what? To be a cheerleader and provide political cover, of course. That was stupid. But then came stupid on steroids. 6 months after announcing this position, Bush finally got around to appointing his new manufacturing czar. It was Anthony Raimondo, a Bush campaign contributor and the CEO of a manufacturing outfit in Nebraska. Fine. Since he's from the biz, he might have an actual idea about how to stop offshoring. But no. Guess who had recently fired 75 of his own corporation's U.S. workers and built a new factory in China to employ 180 workers? Yes, Anthony, our new czar. This is Jim Hightower saying, this was too embarrassing, even for Bush's White House of big blunders, so Anthony's name was withdrawn. But it shows how clueless the Bushites are. As Senator Charles Schumer put it, this White House is so bad at jobs, it can't even fill the one it created.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited, so you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Lots to talk about this hour. John Kerry's plans for the economy, the future of the economy. We've got a Berlusconi alert for you. What's up with the labor secretary, the overtime pay, all sorts of interesting things. And your calls, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be part of the program today. And moving right along, Ray in Greensboro and Alan in Texas have been kindly and patiently waiting. Ray, let's take your call here right straight out of the gate. What's up, Ray?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm great.
Just
but I'll get better.
Let you know, first of all, I love your show.
Thank
and
you.
I've really enjoyed reading some of your essays about Jefferson and then this idea of us being a Christian nation and what a joke that is. But I have had a Cheshire grin on my face all week, and especially this weekend, over the whole Richard Clark thing. It's so obvious that the guy's a pro, not just in terms of understanding counterterrorism, but also a pro in dealing with the political environment in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, he saw what happened to Paul O'Neill, and Paul O'Neill didn't push back. He just went away, you know. And, well, and this guy says, I'm not going to go away. I'm going to push back. It's amazing.
Well, it seems as if he has anticipated every move that they've made to discredit him, and I love to meet the press yesterday when he basically just said, Put up or shut up. Put your cards on the table.
Yeah. So, declassify? Declassify? Sure. Let's declassify it all.
yet another person saying to Bush, bring it on.
Yeah.
But anyway, keep up the great work, Tom, and I'll keep listening. Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Great. Thanks a lot, Ray. And thanks for tuning in. I do appreciate it. 9 minutes past the hour. Alan in Texas is on the line. Hey, Alan, what's up?
Hey, I was wanting to ask you, do you think that the libertarian thought process has taken over the Republican Party?
Yeah, I do. I track the infection of the Republican Party and of the conservative movement in general back to Ayn Rand's publication in the 1950s of Atlas Shrugged and the rise of objectivism, the cult into which Alan Greenspan was actually initiated in her apartment in New York City back about three decades ago. And, I think that the libertarian worldview, which basically is that government plays no role and that corporations ultimately and always will do a better job of running anything than government, has taken over the Republican Party. And you're seeing the results of it now. The government is pulling back. You know, we're not going to involve ourselves in trade policy. We're not going to involve ourselves in economic policy. I mean, they are holding interest rates down, at least until the election. And I thought it was ironic the other day that George Bush took credit for the increase in home ownership, saying that it was caused by his tax cuts. It had nothing to do with tax cuts. It has to do with the fact that the prime rate is at 1% right now, or the overnight rate that banks lend other banks. But anyhow, I think that that's it.
Yeah, I looked up the Ayn Rand website.
Yeah.
And it seems like she really emphasizes the individual and not the group.
Yeah, the key philosophical tenet of libertarianism is individual liberty, and there is no we don't need no stinking social contract that society be damned. We're not here to worry about other people. I am not my brother's keeper, and they believe, and I think with some integrity they believe that if everybody acted in their own best interest, ultimately it would work to the best of society's interest. But actually, history demonstrates that that's not the case. But they believe it. It's a religion. It's a cult. Did I answer your question, Alan?
I can't hardly hear you. I think I'm going out of range.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll let you go then. Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And, we've done entire programs on the whole libertarian thing. Who are they? What are they all about? We get people from the Ayn Rand Institute on here every couple of weeks to talk about these things. Because I think it's important that people understand the worldview of these folks and what the founders of this country understood, and I just understood very, very clearly, was that there is a social contract, that we do depend upon each other. We are interdependent. Now, they were also advocates of individual liberty and freedom and independence, both as a nation and as individuals. But also there was this very clear understanding that the job of government and of governance is for us to decide, what we're going to do that's going to advance the interests of us. And that's why, the preamble of the Constitution says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, not in order to provide for individuals to do whatever they want. No, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America. It's very clear that they understood that there's a social contract, that there is something here that we're all doing together. And it changes over time. Jefferson wrote at length about how, you wouldn't expect a man to wear the same clothes he wore when he was a boy. Similarly, governments must change as times change. And he got very outspoken about that toward the end of his life as the nature of America was changing. As industry was starting to pick up and, the industrial Northeast was starting to grow. It was the early, beginning of the Industrial Revolution. In a big way, before it was fueled by steam and then oil. And he saw this. So, but the libertarian worldview is that no, there is no social contract. We don't have, we, you know, it's, And the result of that is, and it's wildly distorted by the fact that Ayn Rand, who wrote the novel Atlas Shrugged, that kind of gave birth to this whole movement. Ayn Rand grew up in Bolshevik Russia. Her father lost his business in the Bolshevik Revolution. She then went on to study at the university in Kiev, in what was then the Soviet Union, and studied political science there, and was indoctrinated in the belief that there were really only two systems, capitalism and communism. And that in communism, the government owns everything, the government runs everything, and it's evil. And that in capitalism, individual capitalists own everything. And, of course, they were taught that it was evil in Russia. But, you know, when she came over to the United States, she went through this very reactive thing and came to the conclusion that the solution to all things was capitalism. And she didn't understand the difference between what's referred to as laissez-faire capitalism, which is capitalism without rules, which is sort of like boxing without rules, right? I mean, if there were no rules in boxing, can you imagine what might happen in the ring? If there were just no rules at all? I mean, you know, people would die. So we say, okay, you can have a fight, but here's some rules. And that is, you know, how capitalism really is and should function. And it should have been obvious to her in the 1950s. I mean, you know, we had all the scandals of the 1920s and 1930s and the creation of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And, you know, we laid down rules for doing business. Sherman Antitrust Act, on it goes. She said, no, get rid of all the rules. And as I said, it's a cult and it doesn't work. 1-866-889-8894. Mary in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Mary, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thanks. I just wanted to make a couple comments about the Richard Clark situation.
Sure.
First of all, that knowing well what would happen to him for saying what he said because of what's happened to Paul O'Neill and everybody else,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's unfortunate that he's not being appreciated for his bravery for coming out. And number two, that I think that if you take into consideration his entire career through all the various presidents and the fact that this is obviously a man who cares very much about protecting our country from terrorism, he's devoted his life to it.
Yeah.
And I think that the reason that it seems to me, rather than what they're saying against him, that the reason that he's doing what he's doing is because he's still concerned and is trying to get the information out, you know, in order to protect people.
In other words, he's a patriot.
Exactly.
Yeah, I
feel
agree.
That instead of denigrating him, we should be thanking him for continuing at his own risk to do his job.
Yeah, or at the very least, as I think some of the members of the commission are suggesting, we should be asking ourselves, what can we learn from what this man has to say, whether we agree with him or not, whether we question his motives or not, what can we learn from what he has to say?
Exactly, because if anybody knows what they're talking about, it's him.
Yeah, yeah.
So clearly. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, well said, Mary. Thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. 15, 16, 17 minutes past the hour as we move along here. Interesting. Here, we. Let me just... there's the pot. Here we go. The National Anthem of Italy. It's a Berlusconi alert! Prime Minister, now we do our Berlusconi alerts. It's sort of a cautionary tale. Silvio Berlusconi was a small-time crook who became a businessman, who bought a radio station, then bought a television station, then bought another one, then bought another one, and eventually ended up owning 90% of all the media that Italians watch. He owns all the television networks. He owns many of the radio stations. He owns the major newspapers in Italy. And then when he got all the media under his control, he created a political party and ran for office. And guess what? His party won, and he is the prime minister. But he's one of these kind of conservatives, you might say. He actually recently undertook a strident defense of Mussolini. And there are many in Italy who suggest that he's really a fascist. In the classic definition, fascism being the merging of state and corporate interests. That's the dictionary definition of fascism. And here, Berlusconi now has done it. He's said he's looking at ways. He's got to jumpstart the economy. Italy is having problems, right? The conservative economic policies over the last 10 to 12 years have been adopted by many of the European nations. You saw economic conservatives take power in Germany, take power in England. You know, Tony Blair, he calls it the New Labor, right? It was like Bill Clinton's New Democrats. Yes, let's sign NAFTA and GATT and the Telecommunications Act. That is, you see, and then Berlusconi, who is, you know, to the right of George W. Bush, and one of the five big members of the coalition of the billing. And so anyhow, he's got an economic crisis going on in Italy right now. Economic, you know, conservative policies. So what's he going to do? He's going to give a tax cut to the rich. He's going to drop the top tax rate from 46% to 33%. And he says, who cares if it runs the country into debt? Their debt right now is 106% of GDP, the highest in Europe. He says, his answer? There are too many national holidays. We should have Italians work more. Our Berlusconi alert for the week. It's the Tom Hartman program, 20 minutes past the hour.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $2,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis Digilink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com. Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I woke up this morning, stumbled out of my rack. I opened up the paper to the page in the back. It only took a minute for my finger to find my daily dose of destiny under my sign. About pop out of my head. It said the stars are stacked against you, girl. Get back in bed. I feel lucky.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where despair is not an option. Get active, my friends. Time to get active. We need to take this country back. Return it to some rational, rational role in the world, a place. What happened to the time? Just 3 years ago. When you could travel around the world and people say, oh, you're an American. How wonderful. I remember that. It's not, this isn't ancient history. This is just pre-Bush. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the Tom Hartman program today. And let's see, Xavier in Santa Cruz, California is on the line. Hey, Xavier, how are you? What's up?
Excellent. I'm finally listening to your show live. I used to get it on White Rose. And it's really interesting.
Oh, that's great. You're listening on the internet.
Yeah.
Let me encourage you, by the way, if you're an internet listener, and you don't have to make any commitment here and now, but let me encourage you, if you're listening on radiopower.org, to contribute to their efforts. They do a good work, and it's you know, a workman is worthy of his hire, is the old saying. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you were saying, Zane.
Well, I'm a little nervous here. I'm not usually a caller. But I wanted to take a different tack here. I know a lot of folks have this kind of liberalism, conservatism worldview, and I'd like to postulate that maybe the real direction is anarchism versus fascism, and neither of them are a good direction to go in.
Yeah,
but they balance each other.
Well, you know, what you're doing is you're saying, is it the two extremes on this line, or is it the two extremes on this line, or do these lines intersect? And I agree with you. It's not a simple thing of liberal versus conservative. I don't think it's also anarchy versus fascism.
Okay, I'm trying to make another point, and that's
sure.
Something. The point I'm trying to make in a nutshell is that. A lot of times you'll hear arguments about jobs going overseas, and, mm-hmm. and they say that, well, these people are making, you know, 25 cents a week. And part of the factor is it's the housing costs and the food costs and things like that.
Yeah, you can
in
live. You can live in.
Have, like, Michael Moore had this movie Roger and Me, where Flint, Michigan, all these jobs were leaving.
Right.
In a true free market, whenever Flint, Michigan, before the auto industry came in, things were real cheap. And then when people moved out, the market ratchets up, the cost of housing ratchets up. But whenever these companies move back out, you know, what we should do is have a situation where housing costs come down.
Well, they do. They do. You can Xavier, you can buy a really cheap house in Flint, Michigan right now in the neighborhoods that have been devastated by the loss of the GM plants. I mean, to this day. So food, housing prices do go down. I don't think government should get involved in the marketplace at that level.
Okay.
But the reality is that right now we are borrowing from the world.
Yeah.
We are borrowing money from the world in order to finance purchases from other countries of the world for stuff that we consume in the United States. And that trade, what's called a trade imbalance or current account deficit, is a very, very dangerous thing. We end up enormously in debt to these other countries. And so what happens is, in order to use that money, they get all these dollars, and dollars are not worth anything unless you convert them into something. Right. And they can only spend them here in the United States, by and large. So what they do is they come over here, and they start buying up our land. They start buying up our factories. They start buying up our businesses. Yeah. The largest company that publishes my books, Random House, is now owned by Barrett, a German company.
Right.
And so what happens is we're slowly losing America.
Right.
We're giving it away.
I'm not exactly, you know, I'm just playing the devil's advocate. I agree with a lot of what you say, but I'm saying a lot of times.
Yeah, I gotta end it there, Xavier. I'm sorry, we got the music, but I appreciate the call and good point you raised. I hope you'll call back again. It was great to hear from you. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On the layoff watch, MCI will cut 4,000 people, 7% of its workforce, beginning in May. It blames the National Do Not Call Telemarketing Registry for its decision. MCI call centers in 5 states are affected. And as part of its announcement of first quarter results on Wednesday, electronics chain Best Buy may also announce layoffs of its own. The company's targeting 6,800 workers, or an average of about 11 layoffs at each Best Buy store in the United States. Best Buy also plans to outsource some of its back office, IT, and call center jobs.
General strikes are unheard of in the United States, but on Friday, Italian workers staged their 4th national general strike in only 2 years. Banks, schools, rail lines, postal services, and more were shut down in protest of Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi's center-right economic policies. Italian unions are united against the government's efforts to invoke stricter pension requirements, unpopular education reforms, and cuts to social programs.
The UK fishing industry faces extinction unless nearly half of the country's fishing vessels are taken out of commission immediately, so says a new government report. Rampant overfishing and a lack of substantive British or European regulations to curtail the practice lie squarely at the center of the problem. If the report were to become policy, it would throw nearly 6,000 people out of work. The British fishing industry is already contracted by a full third in the last decade. This plan would slash the fleet by a further 43%.
72 employees at New York City's Oyster Bar restaurant can finally go back to work after being on strike for nearly 4 months. Few details of the 3-year agreement were released on Friday, but it was revealed that Oyster Bar will not be able to retain all of the replacement workers hired. All striking workers have the right to return to their jobs. Wages will increase by $7 to $8 per week, and pension and health plans will remain copayment free.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. For working Americans, the economy is stagnant, but for corporate executives, happy days are here again. Spot analyses of the 2003 financial statements from the 200 largest companies in the country shows bonuses for senior executives are approaching the record levels of 1999 and 2000. What's different this time around, though, is instead of taking large grants of stock or stock options as a bonus, executives are opting for straight-up cash payments. Those rose nearly 20% from 2002.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry on Friday, last Friday, unveiled his plan to deal with Benedict Arnold companies. Remember this phrase from the campaign trail? These Benedict Arnold companies, we got to do something about them. What does he want to do about them? He proposed. I thought this was pretty elegant. I should have brought up the sound clip I've got of Jack Kennedy talking about doing pretty much the same thing, actually. In any case, you've heard it on this program before if you're, a regular listener. But what John Kennedy did was when he came into office, the top marginal tax rate, the top rate that you would pay if you were a multimillionaire, was 90%. Now, you know, you'd pay, 10% on the first 110,000 or, what. But you get up to the point where your income was being taxed at the 90% rate. But there were all these loopholes that had gotten written into the tax code, both for individuals and for corporations. And what JFK said was, if we close up these loopholes, we can bring in billions of dollars. It's really a tax increase by closing the loopholes. And so to sweeten the pot, let's lower the top rate from 90% down to 70%. But the net, if you look at the total net, we're actually going to increase the tax revenues that are coming into the United States. And, of course, the cons point to John Kennedy lowering the top rate from 90 to 70% and say, look at that, he did that and there was a boom, an economic boom. Well, yeah, and it was actually a tax hike. So anyhow, John Kerry says that there's this deal in the tax law that basically says that if you go overseas and set up shop and you make a profit, even though you're making that profit here in the United States, ultimately, because you got laborers over there, but you're bringing the product back here and you're selling it to American people and you're making a profit here, that you don't have to pay income taxes on that profit. Until some distant point down the road, frankly, I forget what it was that triggers it. It might be a three-year period or anyhow, you don't have to pay taxes on that profit for some time. And you've got enough years that you can stretch it out over that you can figure out ways to have losses that counterbalance it. You don't have to pay taxes on that profit until you bring the company back here. And as you can, as long as that money is offshore, so you keep the money in an offshore subsidiary, something like that. As long as you keep it over there, you never have to pay taxes on it. If you bring it back into the main company, you do. So Kerry says, let's just end this. This is a joke. This is encouraging corporations to offshore. And it does. He says, let's just stop it. Now, in doing that is going to do two things. It's going to, number one, it's going to bring employees back. It's going to bring jobs back to the United States because it's not going to be quite as profitable to offshore stuff. And number two, it's going to raise income. Because if there's no tax loophole, these companies are all of a sudden going to have to start paying taxes. And they're going to have to pay taxes $10, $12, $15 billion. So he says, okay, to balance that, to sweeten the pot, we're going to cut the corporate rate from 35 to 33.5% or 33.25%. And I thought that was a pretty slick trick. I don't know the math well enough to say that I would support it or not. But I did note that Gene Sperling, who was the head economic advisor for Clinton, ran the math on this thing, and he said 99% of all U.S. companies. Keep in mind, the big ones that are offshoring are basically about 1% of our companies. You consider that there's hundreds of thousands of companies in the United States, most of them small and medium-sized corporations. And the really big corporations in America constitute maybe, 2-3%? And maybe even 1%. Anyhow, he says 99% of American corporations will see a tax decrease because their rate goes from 35 to 33 and a quarter, and 1% will see their taxes rise, and those are the companies that are offshoring. He says, this is tax reform that takes away incentives to move jobs overseas. I think there will be many business groups that will support it. And I think he's right. I think this is a master stroke. So, you know, feel free to let me know what your thoughts are on that. I'm curious. 1-866-889-8894 are our telephone number if you'd like to call in today. David in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom.
I assume you're listening on KTRC there.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you your take on Condi Rice's damage control spin speech yesterday on 60 Minutes. I listened to your show last week, and I recalled, you know, when the controversy first hit that she was avoiding testifying under oath, the Bush administration said a sitting security advisor does not appear before these committees. And then last week you read a list of sitting security advisors who indeed have appeared before such committees under oath a lot of times.
Right, and so she has changed her tune now, and she says, well, that may be, but sitting security advisors don't appear under oath and talk about policy.
Yeah, that was the
question. That's what I picked up
from what you said yesterday, was about matters of policy, and I'm not exactly sure what she means by that. And so if you could explain that to me and also let me know if you think that, you know, that that's going to keep her from doing it, or if they're going to keep dogging her, or what?
Yeah, well,
I'll take my answer on the air.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot, David. I have to say, you know, I'm assuming you meant off the air. I'm assuming you have to. Where was I going with that one? Anyway, I don't know what she means when she says on matters of policy. I mean, how can anybody testify before Congress about their job if their job is involved with policy and it not be on a matter of policy? So I frankly don't know the answer to what it is she's talking about. And I haven't seen any good news analysis where anybody else knows the answer to what she's talking about. And she certainly hasn't not explained it. To me, this is just she's trying to weasel out of this thing. And the reason she's trying to weasel out of it is because if she is put under oath and has to tell the truth, it's going to look really bad for George Bush. I mean, the evidence is just so clear that they dropped the ball, and they dropped the ball in large part because Bush himself had this obsession with Saddam Hussein. Daniel Schorr wrote an op-ed piece in the Christian Science Monitor that came out this last week, in which he just laid it out, and I thought I had it here, I guess I don't, and he said that he had spoken with one of the senior Clinton advisors. No, it's not there. Anyhow, he said he had spoken with one of the senior Clinton advisors who had said that they were speaking with him here it is, right here. Okay. I want to get this right. He says, a Texas Democratic fundraiser, speaking not for attribution, told me — this is Daniel Schorr writing in the Christian Science Monitor this on March 26th — told me about a lunch he recently had at the home of former President Clinton in New York suburbs. Clinton recounted his last meeting with President Bush over coffee just before the inauguration on January 20th, 2001. The outgoing president counseled his successor, that is, Clinton, said to Bush, that he would face five challenges in the international arena: the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the al-Qaeda terrorist threat, a nuclear-armed North Korea, the Indian-Pakistan confrontation, and the Saddam Hussein dictatorship in Iraq. Clinton was surprised at Bush's response. He said he disagreed with Clinton's order that he considered Saddam Hussein to be the primary threat that he would have to deal with. This is a verbatim quote. I just read you from Daniel Schorr's article in the Christian Science Monitor, was Bush fixated on getting Saddam? And then he goes on to point out, again, quoting Daniel Schorr here, former Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill said in his memoir that from the first meeting of the National Security Council, 10 days after the inauguration, the White House seemed obsessed with Saddam Hussein. From his first meeting, 10 days after the inauguration. So, I think that, you know, this is coming out, frankly. And I think that as more and more of it comes out in a clearer and clearer and more and more indisputable way, that probably the only way the White House is going to be able to do damage control on this is for Condi Rice to resign. And I'm expecting that any day now, that, you know, she's going to have some very nice reason that she's got to get out of there. And of course, George Bush and Dick Cheney are going to testify before the commission, but neither of them will testify under oath either. I don't know if you noticed that one, but yeah, they won't testify under oath either. 1-866-889-8894. Philip in Florida is on the line. Hey, Philip, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, hi. One thing that hasn't been mentioned, and I have a gut feeling, we've got, what, 6.5 months before the election. I think these things happen in threes.
Oh, yeah.
And I think between now and the election, someone else from the Bush administration is going to come out and tell the truth. And it's not going to be Rice, because Rice is probably saying to herself, look, I'm not going to let you do to me what we did to Bill Clinton.
Well, the rumor mill says that it's going to be Colin Powell in this book that Bob Woodward is writing.
I don't believe it, and I'll tell you why. I read his book. He knew all of, they admitted, first of all.
No, this is a new book that Bob Woodward is writing right now.
I'm going to tell you why I don't
Colin
think
Powell.
So.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. During the hearings, one of the former Reagan people admitted that they knew that it was the Iranians that killed the 256 Marines in Beirut. Okay?
Right.
With the consent, basically, of Powell, they turned around and sold those same people who blew up the 255 Marines 4,400 TOW rockets.
Right. Well, that was payoff for the October surprise. I mean,
the point is this, that he went along with it. He's a good soldier.
Yeah, he always has been.
He follows orders.
Yeah.
And the orders are, you support me, and he'll do it to his dying day.
Well, he may. But see, here's what's interesting. The interesting dynamic here is that apparently this book is in progress right now. That is to say, it hasn't been finished, or it hasn't been vetted by the White House, or it hasn't,
get approved by the White House.
Right, but it would be really interesting to know what stage of production it's in, if Bob Woodward has actually finished writing it or not.
Yeah, because, they're not going to approve that.
Because once the rumors begin, which they did this week, that Colin Powell is going to out George Bush in a way that's going to harm him politically, then the vengeance machine starts cranking up, and Powell is still part of the administration.
Oh yeah,
and he may push back. I mean, he's a good soldier and he goes along. And
right.
You don't get to be a 4 or 5 star general without knowing how to step on somebody's head when it's necessary.
Well, I think you get along to go along. But the second story I wanted to call you about is, you know how here in Florida, you had Jeb Bush spending taxpayers' money and attorneys to keep alive a woman whose EEG has been flat for 10 years.
Yeah.
But here we go. Here's a woman in this is in the Sunday St. Petersburg paper. Kimberly Gray, 34, attends a funeral Friday for her baby, born in jail. Gray, who had been held without bail at the Falkenberg Jail since February 28th, was put on house arrest Thursday. In jail, she was in labor for 12 hours and pleaded for medical help before giving birth to a boy over a toilet. The boy died before reaching the hospital. Pro-life, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Pro-life.
Yeah, there is a certain irony, perhaps you could call it. 1-866-888. Yeah, these are the same people who say the government shouldn't do anything, the government can't do anything the right, the government is incompetent, but we will trust the government to put people to death that we convict of crimes. Figure that one out. Roberta in New Mexico, you got thoughts on that?
I've got so many thoughts. Tom the Hartman, I just wanted to say, have you ever noticed a couple of fairly trivial comments first, and then I want to ask an important question to the Bush regime. But have you ever noticed how much karma there is in a name? You are the Hartman. You are the man who gets us the truth, the honest truth.
Well, that's sweet, Roberta, but there's no need to butter me up. Let's move
and
along.
And there's Condoleezza.
Yeah, Condoleezza, okay.
And there's the colon. And there's room in the field. Anyway,
interesting.
The question I want to ask is never ask, this is what I want to ask of George Bush and his regime. Don't ask what the country can do for you. Ask what you can do for the country, huh? Okay, can you do that?
Well,
I don't think he's done anything for the country.
Yeah, what George Bush is doing is the same thing that he did when he had the Texas Rangers, and he, you know, they used eminent domain to take this land, and they were going to build a stadium, and they used taxpayer dollars to do it, and it made him richer, you know, substantially. And, you know, he's always either lived off his daddy's friends, the Bin Laden family, or the taxpayer.
Well, you know, that's why I said comparing him to Hitler was a cheap shot to Hitler, because at least Hitler did some things for his country, and he cared about his country. This regime,
well,
and I'm not excusing
let
anything.
Let me stop you there,
Nazi,
Roberta. You can't say that it's a cheap shot to Hitler. Hitler, you know, Hitler was a maniac. I mean, George Bush, I believe, thinks that he's doing the right thing. He's just really, really wrong. And
he's,
you know,
totally self-centered.
Yeah, I think that we hurt our cause when we make statements, you know, like that. It's just,
well, it can't stop it. It's happening all over
the
country.
I know.
People are making it, and it's, I think, a valid one. But anyway, Tom, I want to know how I can get your writings on Jefferson. I'm studying the philosophical political analysts of all time. And did you know that saying, all for one and one for all, goes all the way back to Socrates and Plato?
No, I didn't know that. That's interesting. The book is going to, about Jefferson, that I have coming out, will be out on July 4th from Random House. It's called A Return to Democracy, Reviving Jefferson's Dream. So, and you can order it right now online or from your local bookstore, and they'll have it in a few months. Thanks for the call, Roberta. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. We'll be right back.
That grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Peer pressure often leads outdoor expeditions into risky situations, and for Earthwatch Radio. You're out on a wilderness hike and you begin to feel fatigued, but you don't say anything to your companions because you don't want to seem weak or be the one to end the expedition. That's a common situation, according to Lawrence Gonzalez, the author of Deep Survival, Who Lives, Who Dies, and Why. Gonzalez says peer pressure, real or imagined, often keeps people from speaking up during outdoor recreation activities. He says the stronger hikers or climbers in a group should watch for signs of trouble among their companions.
You really have to look out for and pace yourself to the least capable member of the group. If you have a beginner going out with experts, the experts are going to have to wait, and people often get into trouble, you know, where they don't want to be the one to say, hey, I can't go any faster, will you please slow down? And then they do something dumb like separate the group or just work too hard and exhaust themselves.
Gonzalez says mismatches between abilities can lead to friction, frustration, and poor decision-making. He says you should make sure you're all on the same page before signing up for a group expedition.
There is a type that psychologists refer to as impulsive sensation seekers, and those are the people who you want to be careful about because they're going to take way more risk than is advisable and probably get you hurt as well as themselves. You need to know what type you are, and especially if you're going out with others, match your abilities with theirs.
Gonzalez says there's no shame in recognizing your limitations. He says it's one of the keys to having a safe and rewarding wilderness experience. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Speaking of solving mysteries, interesting here, juxtaposition of news stories, one from Reuters and the other from and ABC News. Reuters, first of all, the first story, March 25th, corporate profits posted a second straight double-digit annual gain in 2003, the Commerce Department said on Tuesday. This is 2 years in a row that corporate profits have been higher than 10%, double-digit. For all of 2003, the Commerce Department said that after-tax profits were up 19.2%. They were up 24.6% the year before. So we are having a recovery for the rich and for the large corporations, no doubt about it. Now, the other news story that juxtaposes with this from ABC News, an analysis by David Morris, consumer confidence continued its steep slide this week, dropping for the fourth time in 5 weeks to reach a new low, a 10-month low. The ABC News Money Magazine Consumer Comfort Index now stands at minus 22 on a scale of plus 100 to minus 100, down 4 points from last week, down 9 points in 3 weeks, and down 19 points since reaching its recent high of minus 3 in mid-January. It's below zero, the consumer confidence, at minus 22. The index measures public views of current economic conditions. Expectations of the future tracked separately are also glum. Pessimism about the economy's direction has jumped 15 points in 2 months, to the highest since just before the start of Iraqi war. You combine this with record gas prices and the slumping stock market and continued weakness in the job market, and people are freaked out. But our biggest corporations are making record profits because labor is so cheap overseas. It's time to get an administration in. It's time to get a Congress in that understands that we actually can set the rules of the game of business in a way that benefits everybody ultimately, even the businesses themselves. We saw it in the golden age of the middle class, the American middle class. We can do it again. This is Tom Harbin. Thanks to Louise for producing the show today. Thanks to Rama Schneider for sitting in and answering the phone for us and helping out with the board. Thanks to Brad Walrod for editing our music. Thanks to you for and thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for showing up. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.